G'day, it's Barry here, and thanks for downloading another Dead Set Legends podcast with Angela Sun and Andrew Embley.
And boy, am I glad this show is over because we had a live eagle in the studio. I've never been so scared. No, not Embers. It's actually Ozzy the Wedgetail Eagle, who flies around Patterson Stadium before every game, was in the studio with us.
We got AFL legend Sam Newman on the show for his thoughts on the Derby and his ideas about where footy is going.
Plus, V8 supercar legend Garth Tander gave us a preview of the V8's May weekend at Barbagallo Raceway and his memories of the great Ayrton Senna.
And swimming legend Eamon Sullivan came in to talk suckling pig and, of course, Glasgow, his shoulder operation and his restaurant featuring in Taste of Perth.
I can just see, Emma's, that you'd really like to get this interview underway because you have got Ozzy the Wedgetail Eagle sitting over your shoulder.
Oh, no, she's looking straight at me. Why is she looking at me like that, Farah? Yeah, seriously, she's staring
at me. Fear in your eyes at the moment.
Oh, my gosh. I'm just going to move a little bit closer this way.
They come over here.
Why?
I wonder if it flapped once and she was under the table, Angela. Yes.
The two of us joined together, though.
That was brilliant.
You know what I mean?
You'd like, be a snack.
Safety.
I'm the main
numbers.
Course. So her trainer's here as well, Yvonne Sitko.
And
Yvonne, you'd be used to this, but how's Ange's reaction?
That's actually quite normal for someone that is a little bit nervous around birds.
Yes.
Yeah, that's perfectly normal.
Okay.
So let's describe the bird. I reckon, how big would it be, do you think?
She's well over a metre in height. She's got about 2.1 metre wingspan.
And a huge beak.
About the height of Dean Cox is a wingspan.
Wow.
And, her weight is around 4 kilos.
And those claws or talons or whatever you call them, they look
mean.
Pretty, yes. And she's sitting on a giant football at the moment that has a bit of grass, artificial grass on top. And that's her spot, is it?
That is her plinth that she lands on at every game. Absolutely. She enjoys her plinth. It puts her on a pedestal and she claims it as her own football.
So if you haven't been to an Eagles game, basically before every game she's unleashed into the crowd, into the sky, and she does a lap and then comes back. And have you ever almost lost it? Why doesn't she just nick off? Why doesn't she just head for the bush?
That's a very good question. A lot of that, we do a lot of training at the ground, and the training it's her playground, really. At the end of the day, it's her playground. She enjoys being there. She enjoys having some fun. She enjoys being a spectacle, and she also gets a reward when she comes down as well. But she wants to be there, and at the end of the day, I've always said if she doesn't want to fly, she will fly off.
And so has she ever flown off?
She has flown off once. That was about 6 years ago. She went off to Northbridge, and we had to go and get her.
We're having a coffee in Northbridge.
The big eagle flies over you.
Interesting.
But she's very comfortable around people, and she considers Patterson Stadium as her home.
Is she dangerous, though, or not?
She's a bird that has been what they call imprinted and socialised. Mm-hmm. So she's not like a normal wild bird of prey.
That's why she wanted to go down to Northbridge.
Have a cappuccino.
She's very familiar with what happens in our everyday environment.
Right.
So she's not a bird that would typically be from the wild.
Yeah, because
so
she came up in the lift here at the studios.
She's perfectly
and
comfortable.
She was okay with that. Yeah. Wow.
Perfectly comfortable in all scenarios.
Except, no, she's looking at me again. Barrow,
what are you feed her, Yvonne?
very good question. Food. During the football season, we always make a point of looking for magpies, crows, kangaroos,
well
and the
done.
Odd docker. Yeah. No, but in the wild, of course, the natural prey would be the rabbits, the kangaroos, goannas,
kangaroos.
Bungaros, wallabies.
So do you feed her live prey then?
No, we do not feed live prey,
okay.
So no, we
so
don't.
So she could actually prey, she could actually feed on a kangaroo.
They do take down and have been recorded to taking down 7 foot high big red kangaroos. That is part of their
so
diet.
What about 6 foot
I'm
high
just going
chubby
under the
bloke?
Desk for now.
There you go.
How do you train a wild animal like that?
Lots of patience, understanding the psychology of the bird, and yeah.
So what is she thinking now then when she's staring at me and her eyes are flicking back like that?
Well, despite our distance across the table, their eyesight is absolutely amazing. They can see 1.5 kilometres away the fine print on a football.
Gosh.
So she's probably counting or looking at your eyelashes, if not the pixels in your eyes.
Really?
Wow.
You thought Patty was good. How's that? Staring into your eyes.
Yeah, so eyesight is amazing. Absolutely.
Wow.
So no lap of honour around the studio here?
And
no,
also,
why would you suggest that?
Is she allowed to fly inside or no?
No, we don't fly indoors.
Oh,
I was just going to go back to...
Are you crazy?
when we're talking about the blonde. Because when it comes to the eagles in the wild, as juveniles, they're actually light in colour. So she considers you to be a juvenile as opposed to adults around us. So she's picking you out as more of a friend.
Oh, I feel more comfortable.
Yeah. Oh, that's so cool. What a brilliant animal. Look, thank you very, very much, Yvonne, for bringing the bird in, I guess, firstly. And we hope tomorrow at Patterson Stadium it all goes well. I'm sure it'll be... For the Derby, she'll really do her best work, won't she?
She does a great job, absolutely. And she enjoys being there, so that's great.
And where can we see her otherwise? Is there other places?
I do have a rehabilitation centre, but it's not open to the public. But I do put information on Ozzy's Facebook page.
She has a Facebook page.
Yeah, she has more friends than me.
we'll pass that on in a moment as well. Thank you very much for coming in.
Thank you very much.
And what a pleasure. You can relax now, Ange. You'd all know the man. He's a television star and a former star for Geelong as well. And I think Embers was out with him yesterday. Sam Newman joins us on the line. G'day, Sam. How are you?
Hello, Adrian. Hello, Andrew.
G'day, Sam.
Just struggling a bit. I've come down with the something.
You and me both.
Yes, they said it hadn't rained here for 6 months, so I didn't bring any covering, of course, and it hasn't stopped raining since I got here.
It might be rodent disease from touring around with the mouse.
Yes, caliche virus, an extension of the rabbit virus.
Sam, Embers was saying that while you're here, you're doing sort of 13 or 14 shows.
I think you're doing a few shows.
No, I think that's right. I think it's 13 or 14. Okay. It might be more. How does it go, mate? How do you find the shows, and do you like getting out into the bush and meeting people?
Well, I do. Think that we like to do a bit of promotion for the show. People seem to like our show. I don't suppose they'd come along to the functions if they didn't, or they might come along to see if I'm as... they think what I am in the first place, or they can make up their mind who they think I am. But I enjoy going out and seeing parts of Australia I haven't seen before, and I actually do enjoy it.
So how do people receive you?
Warily. dip a toe in the water, and I'm always surprised by people's reaction because... Mm-hmm. You know, your reputation, I suppose, is what people think you are, and when they meet you, they can make up their own mind whether that reputation is warranted or it's not.
So do most people then change their mind after they have met you?
I don't really know. I never try and convince people who I am or what I do or how I do it. Just let them make up their own mind.
Fair enough.
Sam, massive game over here in the West tomorrow. Yeah. From your opinion... Do you think that this game is a complete waste of time and the only reason you're over here is for the frequent flyer points and you want to get straight back to Melbourne and get home as soon as possible?
No, not at all. I've only ever been in the last 4 years to Derby games. I don't go to the football back home. I have come over here for the last 4 years doing what I'm doing this week and then going to the Derby games. I think they're fantastic. The great thing about our game, whether you think it's in decline or not from the way it's played, which I probably do, the great thing about our game, and has always been a great thing about our game, is the rivalry and the town-to-town, city-to-city battles of being parochial. And the great thing I always mention to people is that this country is extraordinarily lucky for three reasons. We don't have political, religious, or sporting wars. And our game has tremendous crowd activity with very, very little violence or scuffles or problems for the authorities.
Mm-hmm. That's a good point.
But the way the modern game's going, you're not too happy, are you? I've heard you say that before, not enamoured with the way the rules committee changes things and the style of footy nowadays, that rugby style that they play?
Soccer style, very similar to the way soccer's played. Look, I'm not a fan of the way it's played, but that doesn't, of course, deter people from going because they are tribal. They don't care how their side wins. My only comment about the way it's played is I don't think it's logical. It doesn't matter if we don't like it. If you are successful by playing a certain brand of football, well, so be it. But if both sides play this stop, start, don't kick it to a contest, chip it across the back line, hand pass just for the sake of hand passing style of football, don't look for the power forwards, don't try and press the game too much in case you lose. If each side plays that style of football, at the end of the day, one side is going to say, or one group of fans are going to say, well, that's a ridiculous way to play football because we didn't win. It would be great if someone broke the mould and got back to traditional football, which is not to appease me or anyone, but I think it is more logical to play a quicker brand of football that gets the ball down to the forward line so that power forwards and people who are picked for certain positions have a chance to prevail.
Here, here. I think we agree with that, Angus, don't we?
I agree with you.
We totally agree with you, brother. Good on you, Sam. It's great to have you in town. I believe you're at the Mosman Park Footy Club tonight, so enjoy that, and thanks for being part of Derby Week. Now, a segment for the Revheads. For the V8s are coming next week to Barbagallo Raceway, and one of the finest drivers, arguably the finest driver ever to come out of Western Australia, is Garth Tander, and he joins us on the line. G'day, Garth. How are you?
Good morning, guys.
Yeah,
morning.
Great to speak to you. In Derby Week, too, you'd be excited about that, wouldn't you, Big Eagles, man?
Yeah, Eagles get up this week for sure.
Fantastic.
He says hopefully, wishfully.
Yeah, they're always great, aren't they? Look, as we said, the V8s are coming to town. It's always a great weekend. Is it one that you love competing in and always try to win, obviously, being the local boy?
Yeah, obviously. It's a one chance a year that I get to come home and race in front of friends, family, and all the WA supporters. Obviously, being the only WA boy this year, there's a huge amount of support, and it's fantastic because WA fans are so parochial. We know that from the footy. We know that from all cricket. We know that from all the sports that the WA is involved in. So to have that support from the WA people is fantastic.
Pretty close-knit community, the motor racing community, no doubt. And, of course, we have had some terrible tragedies over the time, not to take the show down a bit, but it was the 20th anniversary of the death of Ayrton Senna yesterday, and the outpouring of grief 20 years on was incredible. He must have been a phenomenal driver and a phenomenal personality.
Yeah, he was. He polarised people. He was so strong in his beliefs. He was really religious and really believed strongly in that polarised a lot of people. But then on track, he was ruthless, really ruthless, just did whatever it took. And a lot of people really liked that about him. And he, I think, you know, there's a lot of people that throw, you know, things around like the greatest ever and all the rest of it. But I think he truly was the greatest ever. And the die way he did, you know, leading the race in front and then basically had the crash and looked like not a massive crash and didn't walk away from the car. So 20 years, it's incredible. For me, I couldn't believe it was 20 years until I saw all the media about it. But, it was 20-year anniversary this year.
I
remember waking up the next day. I was still at school at that stage, waking up and thinking, God, how could this happen? I didn't go to school that day. It was, it was strange. I mean, obviously different things affect different people. And, obviously growing up a motor racing kid, you know, you looked up to Ayrton and to think that he was gone was, unbelievable. A lot like what we're going through at the moment with Michael Schumacher, who's still in a coma, five, 6 months on after his skiing accident. To think that guy, seven-time world champion, raced cars his whole life and then have something small like a skiing accident, you know, potentially take him out of action. It's devastating. It's hard to get your head around.
So that movie that was out recently about Senna, you must have loved that then. That was incredible, wasn't it? The vision, the exclusive vision they had, that was so powerful.
Yeah, the behind-the-scenes stuff. I mean, a lot of people involved in motor racing and sports fans, I guess, would have seen a lot of the on-air vision and known a lot about that. But the behind-the-scenes vision that you saw, and just like I was saying before, how strong he was in his own beliefs and how driven he was, you know, he didn't take a backseat to anyone, and that vision that we saw in the Senna movie was incredible. It was really fly on the wall type of stuff, it was a lot like what we do in V8 supercars, but that was a whole other level. You know, it was really, really cool to watch.
Mate, well spoken, well said, and we look forward to seeing you next week. And yeah, good luck to the Eagles, eh? Are you in town yet? Are you going to go along or not?
No, not there yet. Still in Melbourne, so I won't get to see
the Derby? I mean,
I've been living in Melbourne so long, we call it Derby or Derby?
Yeah, it's Derby. Confusing.
They can't get their head around it over here now, and they're starting to pollute me with it as
well. Definitely Derby, mate. Yeah, Derby.
Derby, that's it. Yeah,
like,
yeah.
Like the town.
That's it. Absolutely. Good way. Good way. Yeah. I can't believe it's what, 39th Derby already?
Yeah.
It is. Yeah. I think the score is 20. I think it's 21-17 at the moment.
Yeah, West Coast got off to a cracking start and then Fremantle fought back. So it's pretty even now.
Good on you, Gus.
We'll get up this one. So thanks, guys.
Thanks for spending some time with us and talking about Ayrton Senna. There he goes. Gartander in town next week for the at Barbagallo Raceway for the V8s.
And we have a special guest now.
We do, yes. And it was... I mean, he's one of our greatest swimmers, arguably Western Australia's greatest swimmer in the studio, Eamon Sullivan. And, Eamon, welcome to the show, mate. I wasn't sure what you were, where your career was at. I thought maybe you were sort of putting it on the back burner and moving on to your restaurant and your coffee shop and all that. And then you went to the Commonwealth Games trials and just brained them and qualified. Yeah. Was it a surprise for you as well, like just how well you did?
Yeah, I wasn't expecting to. It was a textile PB, actually, since all the suits. And, I always had the year off to have a bit of a refresher, and I had my first shoulder up, and it was more about making sure that I wanted to keep swimming for the right reasons. And that year off, I decided I wanted to keep swimming and sort of started doing a different type of training program and something I want to keep doing for the next few years to keep my body in one piece, and I guess it's working.
Yeah. All right. And you're off to the Commonwealth Games, so you probably had something planned for July and August, did you? Now it's taken up.
No, I'd always planned to be somewhere racing, whether it was there or there's always meets in Europe and a sort of racing circuit through the winter period. So I'd always planned to, and that was the reason for doing trials, was to get back into the system and be up for selection for any sort of team coming up. But I didn't expect to go quite that well, but it's a welcome surprise.
And you've just had a shoulder op. How's that going?
Yeah, just had another one a few weeks ago, straight after trials, actually, which was always planned, just a clean out. But I got back in the water 2 weeks after and been in for a week now, and 3 weeks is sort of the time where it's supposed to start improving a lot, and starting to feel a lot better and moving along and back in the gym and getting full movement. So it's all happening.
Eamon, as a professional sports person, it's pretty important, as you know, to be able to have a balance. And I know you've obviously got the restaurant, you've got a few other little bits and pieces. Is that something that you're preparing for life after swimming?
Yeah, definitely. And I think that was part of the reason, having that year off and opening the restaurant and deciding whether I could give 100% to swimming again or whether I enjoyed, the hospitality side of things. And it can consume you as well. I think, being a sportsman, whatever you do, you give it 100%. And that year I was giving 100% to the restaurant. And I think I'm lucky now it's at a point where it can sort of run itself. We've got managers in place. And I definitely realised that I hadn't given 100% to swimming over the last 4 years. I had, but my body had let me down, and I wanted to make sure I could last another 3 years for the next Olympics. So it's good that I was able to have that year, open the restaurant, and now I feel like I've just got nothing to lose as well. Mm-hmm. I'm 100% committed to the sport and excited to race again, but if things don't go my way, it's not the end of the world.
So you're going to kick on to the games, eh? The Olympic Games?
Yeah, that was the plan. That was my decision. It was either I'm going to Rio or I'm retiring. That was the thing. I wanted to get to a fourth. Wow.
You can't miss out on Rio.
No. I've been to Rio once.
I reckon it'd suit you too, Rio.
I went there once for a trip in 2004. I didn't even get to Copacabana Beach. So I've got unfinished business, I think.
I reckon there's a fair chance people might be going over for the World Cup and waking up 2 years later. Like, we're still here. Yeah. It's that kind of place.
What a mankini. You wouldn't get a mankini on, though, would you, on Copacabana?
Probably not. There'd be a fair bit of manscaping.
Tell you what, if he wins a gold medal, he'll have one on.
I might have had a wedgie that resembled that when I was getting into swimming for the first time. But
now, talking about the restaurant, Bibb and Tucker is featuring Dan at Taste of Perth, which is on at Langley Park this weekend. And tell us about that. What has Bibb and Tucker got an offer?
We've got a pop-up stall in there. We've got suckling pig sliders. We've got a rotisserie on there. We've got a Fremantle octopus dish that actually placed second yesterday in the Best of the Taste Festival. I've got a ocean trout tartare and a textural beetroot salad for the vegetarians.
And will people see you behind there serving and cooking? Or?
Yeah, it ended up being so busy yesterday. I had to get in the kitchen and I was on the slider station, so I had to get my hands down. I think my training at Subway as a teenager really paid off for that one. So
the suckling pig, just describe that a bit more. So
no, don't. I'm
mouth watering. Is it in a bun or?
Yeah, so we've got little brioche buns that we got made from our baker and a pickled fennel salad, and we've got pulled pork off the rotisserie. So
I've got to ask, being a foodie, have you been watching My Kitchen Rules? Did you watch the grand final?
That's not a food show; that's a gossip show.
And I
do watch it. I think because
everyone else,
does. Food's. I love watching food shows regardless, but. There's just, the cattiness and stuff I just can't deal with.
Why do they always portray West Australians as really catty and BHs or whatever you call them?
I'm not sure.
it must be so because we're the small state, I suppose, in terms of numbers. Hey, just one serious question. You said getting back into the pool. I mean, is it a big... I mean, swimming for Australia, is there a lot of pressure on? Because we've noticed that a lot of the stars, when they've come out of it, have really struggled. Thorpey, Hackett, now Skippy, they've really struggled to get on top of their life. Mm. Is it the pressure? Is it the expectation? Is it that high you can't get anymore?
Oh, I don't know. I mean, I wouldn't put myself in the same category as those guys, but I think, especially for Thorpey being in the spotlight since he was 14, it's a pretty hard thing to live in, I reckon. And he couldn't leave his house without swarms of people coming up to him. And I think you sort of just get used to being in your own company. And, I would have no idea what it's like, actually. So, you just hope that they have some support and they can get back on track. And they Hackie, Thorpey and Skippy all have, great careers outside the pool. But I think... you just hope they get the support they need.
Looks like it. Magnussen, we had Steve Montaghetti on earlier, and he's obviously the chef de mission for the Commonwealth Games, and he said that Magnussen sounds like he's matured and grown up, and you learn not to shoot your mouth off when you're a swimmer, don't you, or any sort of athlete, really?
Well, I think the best thing you can do is learn from your mistakes, and I think London was a case of not having been to Olympics before. It was it's a big step up, and people that have been there before, you try to tell the rookies on the team, it doesn't matter if you've been to world champs or Comm Games. Like, Comm Games is half of the world. You don't have the US. And you step in Olympic Village and it's just, it's like, it's something you can't describe it. And, you step on a pool deck and half of the 20,000 seat stands is media with cameras. And, it's like a deer in headlights sometimes when you get there. So it's something you can't prepare for. And hopefully next time he'll be ready for it.
Yeah, because he's a brilliant swimmer. Well, thanks for coming in. Obviously, Bib and Tucker are featured in The Taste of Perth. Angie, going to make it down there? Still too
crook? Hopefully. I'm not feeling that great, but hopefully I can get down there.
Bring back some cycling pig,
please.
It looks
so good. I can see it from my apartment. it's very tempting.
And Louis Baxter's, of course. And Bib and Tucker, though, North Fremantle, great place. I went there the other day. Couldn't get in. It was too busy. I was going to drop your name. I thought, only halfback flankers do that. What a place. Well done, Eamon.
Cool.
Good
thanks,
on you,
guys.
Thanks for joining us. The Dead Set Legends, Mix 94.5.